Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's still so important, and I hope it doesn't get sidetracked and people don't feel like they can't talk about their stories. Just because there's a global pandemic doesn't mean that the person that you lost 3 months ago suddenly gets overshadowed by that.
This week's episode of Grief Encounters is certainly a different one, because we're living in different times, I suppose. The audio that you're going to be hearing for this week's episode is taken from an Instagram Live that I did with Megan Devine. You might know Megan Devine better as her name Refuge in Grief, or as the author of It's Okay That You're Not Okay, a book that has helped so many people around the world who are struggling with loss. It was so great to see Megan's face and chat with her on Instagram Live. I've only done a couple of them, so I was kind of nervous. And also because I really admire everything that Megan has done in the grief world and what she's taught me and continues to teach me every day about how we deal with loss and how we deal with grief and self-acceptance and how to help our friends and family be a better support to us throughout grief. During the chat, we start off talking a little bit about Grief Encounters, our podcast, but we talk about so many different things, from how we're all being affected right now, especially during the coronavirus crisis, and how grief is coming into that, and how we process feelings. It goes beyond grief, I suppose, how we deal in these uncertain times. It was a great opportunity to get the chance to chat with Megan live. And she lives on the West Coast of the US, and I'm here in Dublin. So it was a pretty cool thing to make happen, especially because we were both pretty worried about the technology coming together for us. So I thank her for asking me to join her. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you guys enjoy listening too.
We're based in Ireland, but I think we're kind of not Irish-centric in the sense that we have guests from all over the world. And I guess it's really just about stories. It's people telling the stories of the people that they loved, how they lost them, and then how they are living their lives since that happened. And, you know, we don't have qualifications. We're not people who have studied grief, but we've both, myself and my co-host is Venetia, we've both experienced it in our lives and it changed our lives. So we both felt really passionate when we met each other about looking at these stories and telling these stories. And we both worked in the media. We both do work in the media and we have for a long time. So telling stories came really naturally. And I think we've been, to say privileged would be an understatement, in getting to hear these most intimate, most beautiful, most cherished stories from people. And we've been so lucky. Every time someone sits down in the room, every single time, it feels remarkably special that they would be willing to open up and talk with us. So it's been probably one of the greatest things I've ever done. one of the most surprising things. It came, you know, I didn't anticipate that this would ever be a part of my story or my life. But to say that it's taught us, I think Venetia would agree with me, taught us so much about people and empathy. And how I found your work was after both my parents had died, I kind of was like searching for anyone that would understand the position I was in. And I thankfully landed on some of your work, which, so maybe that was the initial seed of our podcast, who knows.
One of my favorite things about your podcast is that the story focus. I mean, there's so many different ways to do a podcast and to talk about grief, but what I love about your podcast with Venetia is your, just exactly how you described it, like the story of how people are living with this loss that changed them. And that's a different angle than I think a lot of podcasts come at it. And there is something really special about listening to people's stories. Like we do that a lot in your grief course, right? Like that community is where people come together and tell their own story about what it's like to be them. And that is so powerful. And we see that in our comments here on Instagram Lives, and of course, like on the social media channels, but being privileged to witness and to hear people's real stories of their lives, like that is powerful.
It's really powerful. And it teaches you, I think, you know, you talk a lot about this and you do it better than I do it in terms of articulation, but sometimes people kind of, there's a lot of blankets in grief, like this is how it is, or this is how people should be, or this is how people react. And by sitting and hearing these stories, it became so clear that it was so different for so many people. There were threads of truth. There were threads that connected us, but they had so many different ways that it changed them or that they coped. And that was such a beautiful eye-opener for me as a person. I felt like I evolved immediately when I started to realize that my grief experience wasn't the exact same as someone else's. And learning that, and then kind of like being really struck by it and thinking there were similarities, but there were also these incredible differences. And I don't know, I just thought that there was just so much richness in learning about just hearing their stories and knowing how it shaped their lives.
So how do you think having your view expanded that way? Like, how did that change the way that you see the world, the way that you see your own grief, and the way that you kind of see community?
Like, for me, everything changed. Everything. And I think the best thing it has done for me personally, and I won't speak for anybody else, but for me personally, my curiosity and my openness, I feel like a much more open, much more curious person.
I love that it kind of sparked your curiosity. Yeah. So we had Lennon Flowers on last time, earlier this week, and she was talking about leading with curiosity. And somebody actually put in the comments, I don't know if you're here this time, friend, but somebody put in the comments that their dissertation topic is the neuroscience of curiosity, which sound like the fascinating thing ever. But I love that hearing other people's stories awakens your own curiosity. Like humans are fascinating. And when we start to allow that other people's experience, one, can be different from ours, but two, is valid, right? Then we get to be like, oh, isn't that interesting? You have that your loss affected you this way. It doesn't happen like that for me. Like, that's so interesting. Instead of like, no, my way is the right way.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think one of the things I learned from, you shared a video that's been shared by quite a number of people talking a little bit about how to maybe sit with someone when they're not at their finest moment in their life and they're having a difficult time, whether that be grief. I think it applies to a lot of things, but you shared that video. And what I loved about it was the thing I've learned from it in the curiosity side of things is challenging myself when I'm involved, when I'm with someone and I don't understand their experience. So that letting that curiosity lead and putting kind of the closed, fearful side of me aside and saying, try and remain open. Try not to be afraid of something you don't understand. And like, I'll be completely honest, sitting with some of our guests who have had the most unimaginable circumstances, I feel scared. My heart races before I sit down because I'm so scared sitting with that pain and trying to honor it, but also just trying to be open and not fearful, because these people, it's almost like they're like sacred, like they've gone through something that, you know, you can't. So you have to. But I think by remaining open and challenging that curiosity and being able to sort of learn more about yourself and the world, which, you know, is what it's done for me, obviously, you know, and you always drive this home really well, which is like, not sugarcoating this. I'm not trying to make this seem like some sort of silver lining thing. It's just when I'm looking at the experience, for me, the curiosity is just one thing that's evolved.
Well, it sounds like it gives you a layer of comfort when you're facing this like daunting enormity. Right? Like sitting with somebody who has had such a massive loss, it is daunting, right? I keep thinking of a Terrible Beauty. Is that Yeats? My literature skills are very good. On point today, but I'm sure it's
it kind is. Of
the brain library sometimes. but that sitting in the shadow of somebody's immense trauma or loss, like that is very daunting for all of those reasons that you brought up. And also like, I don't want to fuck this up.
Yeah.
Like, please help me not say something stupid and unintentionally insensitive, like all of those things, but also just the force of it, right? Like it is a force. And I feel like curiosity can sort of help soothe that dauntedness, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah.
Or at least like let us enter the room and turn on the microphone. Right? Like
Exactly.
It sounds like that's like curiosity lets you turn on the microphone when you're feeling like, can't.
It does. And it goes back to the thing that is so, I mean, I know has been so important to me, which is the like say their name type of thing, right? So like it goes back to allowing someone, because I know I need it. I need it when I love when people ask me about my parents. It makes me feel much better. And I know that a lot of people, you know, if they haven't experienced grief, sometimes that's a real weird one for them. They're like, surely you must not want to talk about it. But when you're sitting with someone and,
right.
and
you don't want to remind you that your person is dead.
Yeah, I forgot. It's weird. I don't know how I forgot about that. Exactly.
Yeah.
But when you allow the curiosity allows you to find out more about the person, I find that like, you know, like these people then who they start to come to life and you can see them, you can like imagine what they were like. And I find that really wonderful. It's like, you know, trying to, they almost, I mean, I'm not getting hippie, crazy hippie on this because, you know, but it's like they kind of come into the room a little bit.
I mean,
and it's really nice, you know, it's like a really
nice thing. We talked about this the other day when we were talking about saying the person's name and asking about them and sharing about them. It makes them three-dimensional. They do enter the room, right? I feel like, you know, especially in the first several years after Matt died, like, well, honestly, I still do it now. I have conversations with him all the time.
Yeah.
He's pretty quiet. But when somebody else joins a conversation, it's like they become three-dimensional. And this is why it's so important to say somebody's name or, you know, ask somebody like, so tell me about them. Like, what was the weirdest thing your mom used to do on your birthday for you? Like, just like bring the people into the room. And for so many grieving people, it's like those invisible losses pile up when people stop asking and stop talking about them. Right. It's like suddenly they no longer exist. Yes, they do. Or it erases the history. If you don't bring their names into the present, it erases the history.
I agree with you completely. The erasing of the history, it hurts. I think it actively hurts.
Yeah.
It's not a passive pain. It's kind of like you can actually, if you know someone is actively avoiding the subject or just doesn't, I feel pain where I think, you know, let's not pretend that they never were here. We don't always have to talk about it. It doesn't have to be the thing we talk about 24 hours a day. But, you know, even hearing you say Matt's name, and I love the way you talk about him because it makes someone else, I think it gives people permission as well to go, I can say my person's name now, you know, and I think that feels like a pretty great thing to give someone when they get the, you know, and grieving people who, when they're talking to each other, that's the thing that happens sometimes where they go, I'm allowed to talk about it here.
Yeah. And I think like that's what's so powerful about stories, right? Like about like a podcast like yours that shares stories and places where we encourage people telling stories because it gives permission for other people to do that. Because in so much of like the normal everyday world, people are freaked out by the stories. They don't want to talk about your person because it makes them feel weird or helpless. So, you know, that role modeling, right? Like that, I'll go first. Whenever there's something like sort of weird or dodgy about something about grief that I feel like people would probably want to talk about, but they're embarrassed about, I'm always going to go first, right? Like, I don't care. But going first, that it opens that door and lets people say, hey, me too. And maybe I can talk about this. And it's one of the things that I really love about the community of grieving people is that, we really love to listen to each other for the most part.
And you know, I think so through reading your work and readings, like, I think one of the most powerful things I've learned, and I know this is going to sound like super basic 101 stuff, but it was a challenge for me. And I'm saying this because it might be a challenge for other people who are watching. I always related my own experience when I was talking to somebody else. I always did that thing, the thing. I always was like, well, when it happened to me.
Yeah.
I was right. Like, I was really bad for that. And it was this instinct to like try and tell the person that they were in a safe space. And by the way, I've been there. So I know what, I understand. And it's taken me like a lot of, I still work on it now to try to fight that instinct to just hear that story and not bounce it back to mine. Yeah. And that's part of the, I guess, evolution stuff is learning new ways to hear people. And that kind of like, it goes far beyond grief. It goes up, it goes to everything.
Everything.
To just being able to, if someone's had, you know, lost their job, the first thing you don't say is, well, when I lost my job.
Right. Hey, when that happened to my neighbor's cousin's sister-in-law.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's this human instinct. And I actually feel a lot of compassion when I hear someone else do it or when they do it to me. Mm-hmm. Because I know that it's coming from a place of just immediately trying to like react without thinking that
it's the human impulse to connect.
Yeah.
Right. It's the human impulse to connect. And it's not really our fault that we do it so badly because that's what we've been trained to do that. Right. Like connect, like show them that you empathize, like don't otherize them. Like all of these conflicting messages about how we're supposed to be here for each other. And I love that you said like, you know, like you cringe when you do it. I do it. Maybe not a lot, but like when I hear myself do it, I'm like, oh my God, you are supposed to be good at this. So I, one of the things that's happening with the pandemic is I'm actually meeting a lot more of my neighbors because I am at work. So like I work from home all the time. But you know, my neighbors are all working from home. And I met a really lovely neighbor the other day, a little sidebar, I was outside and I heard screaming and I thought it was a domestic violence incident. Mm-hmm. So I called it in because obviously I'm going to take care of who I need to take care of. But it turned out she was trying to break up a dog fight.
Oh God.
And she had gotten bitten and that was the screaming. So like,
yeah,
whatever. I called it in.
Yeah.
I've been that person. I've been that person in danger and needing help and nobody called. So I always thought, and fine. It turned out to be a not domestic violence, yay. But anyway, I met my
neighbor. Someone needed help,
Right? I met my neighbor because of that, and she was telling me the story about being bitten by her dog. And I swear, like, I watched the thought process go through my head of, like, oh, right, that happened, like, 20 years ago. Because she was talking about, like, I feel so bad. I was really pissed off at my dog, but it's also my fault. I didn't set her up for success. And I actually did it. I was like, that sounds really hard. Like, I get that. When I was teaching, blah, blah, and I went through my whole damn story about being bitten by a little kid. And 3/4 of the way, like, I was already invested in the story.
You were there.
No stopping me. But the other part of my brain is going, what the fuck are you doing? Don't you think about this? Like, don't you point this out to
me? But like, isn't it so good that it's still active for you? Like you, like it makes me better feeling here. It's like, it's gotta be active. And maybe that's the whole point is that you have to like constantly learn about yourself and find out when you're doing it.
Yeah.
And like, you weren't trying to shut the conversation down.
I was trying to relate and connect. Yeah. Right. And so, and this is what we get a lot from, in grief, right? When you're talking about your experience and somebody is like, oh yeah, me too. So let's unpack that for a second. Cause there's a bunch in there. One is that impulse to connect. And we think that that's how we empathize and that's how we connect with somebody else. And again, it's like, it's not our fault that we do that. That is the way that we've been trained. It's also an instinct. Mm. And it's not like you become aware of it and then you're perfect at it forever. I literally talk about this stuff and I screw it up. And this is why we talk about this stuff as practice, right? Like meditation is a practice. Compassion is a practice. Communication skills need practice. And because we hear pain all the time, everywhere, we have a million chances to practice listening.
Yeah. And
right?
I love that you're saying it like it's not like a finish line. It's not like
it's
you
not,
just end,
it can't be.
Yeah, that you just end up like this super compassionate person who has no learning left to do.
Yeah.
I think
I'm a super compassionate person and I'm human and I get tired. Yeah. And I screw it up sometimes. And I think that has to be okay, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a more skillful response that I could have done in that moment was when I realized what I was doing, I could have stopped and said, you know what? I just realized that I'm totally taking over your story right now and I'm going to stop my story. Mm-hmm. And I've done that before when I've caught myself and been like, I'm sorry, yeah, I need a do-over. Can we go back to you? So it's okay to do that. And it's a work in progress, right?
And then I think so. I think I find that when I'm like writing a message now to someone, mm-hmm. I find myself doing the like, write, erase, write, erase, write, erase, write, erase. And then I kind of like
internal text editor.
Yeah, just kind of, but like trying to, whereas before I think like I would have been comfortable maybe with a bit of a like traditional response. Mm-hmm. Now I'm like, this is important that this person who's experiencing a loss or has experienced something feels completely heard and not. And so if I feel, but it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing where I'm like, you know, I'll be like, I'll write it. And then I'll be like, nope, you put yourself with, mm-hmm.
try it again. From that angle, and that is not good.
Try it again.
This could possibly be interpreted in this way. And that is also not good. Right. I mean, so I think that there can also be some analysis paralysis in there.
Probably.
That,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I like that. That also sort of brings us into a lot of the times it's, you know, when somebody says, hey, when that happened to me, it's more about I never got to tell my story. So since you brought up grief, I'm going to talk about my story now. And this is like that is irritating as fuck. Right. Mm. Like, when you said, when you're talking about, you know, my sister was killed by a drunk driver in a crosswalk, mm-hmm. and you say, that reminds me of when my sister mm-hmm. Went through this terrible divorce, and like, whoa, that's hijacking, right? Like that's hijacking somebody's story with a story that you've been wanting to tell, but haven't had a space to do it. And I think this is why we do that to each other so often, is because we don't have spaces to tell the story. And that doesn't mean the story goes away. It means it sort of waits in the wings, waiting for its cue. Like, oh my God, now it's my turn. Which is why it's so important that we make these spaces, like the ones that you've created, to be able to tell stories, because it's so important.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And that's, I mean, I guess what we hope is that, because podcasting is like a really intimate genre or medium, I suppose, it gives people the opportunity to just sit and listen to somebody on their own with no judgment. That's what I think is like what I love about it, is that they can just sit there and hear someone else tell their story and think to themselves, if it's okay for that person to tell their story, maybe it'll be okay for me to tell mine.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I don't know that people, obviously we get so many messages and people will just tell us, they might just tell us in a private message, which I'm sure you get a lot too.
Yeah. A lot.
But even just hearing it, even just knowing that they had that 5 minutes to sit down and write a message, a DM, like, I don't know, I like keep saying the same thing, but I just feel really honored that someone would even take the time out to do that. So
yeah, that they look to you as a person who can hear it, which is an honor. And this room, so somebody just sent in a comment here. So what if the person you're talking to appreciates the desire for connection and it feels good to hear somebody else talk? For example, a friend miscarried and I've had a stillborn and a miscarriage, and that feels like a good way for us to connect. So what about those folks who, like that power of connection that mm-hmm. when you hear somebody who had a loss similar to yours and you get to connect on that. So what do you think about the Me Too with that aspect from that angle?
Well, I don't think we could eat. I mean, those are like the most cherished relationships there are when you have, you know, if you have someone and you guys can meet somewhere, there's that connection part mm-hmm. where they go, oh, everything you're saying, I get, and vice versa. I mean, that's like, I initially in my very early stages after, so my dad died first and then my mom died, I was like, I do not know a single other person on this mm-hmm. planet except for one friend who had quite recently also experienced the same thing. And her and I just like magnets, like we just,
yeah.
And everything was basic. Everything came out of each other's mouths. We're yeah. like, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and
so there's something really powerful there about kinship.
Yeah. So I think, yeah. of course, I think like, look, you know, I know for me, and I'm only speaking for me, like I was quite prickly in those days, those early days. I felt like nobody could like say anything
yeah.
right to me. I was so broken and hurt, and I was missing what felt like the only people in the world that could like make it right were just not here anymore. And so I probably took a lot of things up like wrong, but I learned a lot about myself in the process. But certainly those moments I know, and I know this from other friends who have experienced similar losses. So whether it be like an episode we just did, which was really like so powerful about a group of men in Ireland who they're scheduled to play this football match in May. I really hope they get to play it. Mm. And it's all in honor of the babies that they lost. And they're going to wear the babies' names on the back of their jerseys. And these guys are all connected through stillbirth and neonatal loss, so babies that died, you know, quite early on. And they get together and they talk on the episode, which was not this week before, mm-hmm. They just talk about what it feels like to be in that room with other guys who know what it's like to lose a baby. Mm. And it's like remarkable. You could just feel the energy between them because they'd been through something similar together, and they allowed each other to tell each other, to hear each other's stories. So there's a huge power in when you do feel like someone is saying something and it's speaking directly to you.
Yeah. And it, for me, I think the thing that makes the yes, me too different is the power of choice, right? So if we go back to my awesome neighbor with the dog fight, if I had said, that sounds really difficult. I had a similar experience with somebody who was in my care, and I didn't set it up for success for them. And I'm happy to share my experience with you if it would feel helpful. You know, right. So we're giving the first speaker the option. You know, if you like, oh man, I really don't know how to deal with this, and I feel really alone in it, and I would really love to hear what it's like for you.
Yeah.
Then yes, have at it, right? Like there is so much power in the overlapping Venn diagram of loss that makes all of this survivable and bearable. And if you don't want to hear about somebody else's loss in this moment because you're feeling prickly or your bandwidth is just not there, then you should have the option to say like, I'm sorry that happened to you. I can't actually listen to that story right now. So it's really important that I stick with my own for the moment. Mm. Somebody else had made a comment in here sort of along those lines that they had mentioned that their mom was going through cancer treatments, and somebody they didn't really know started crying because they had just either lost somebody to cancer or somebody. Sorry, I didn't quote that exactly because the comments went away, but
they go up so fast.
I mean, all of this is tricky and all of this is messy. And, you know, that the person who falls apart when they hear your own devastating news, that's not always nefarious, and that's not always a bad communication skill. Sometimes it's like, you know, I mean, it reminds me of like, have you ever had this experience, Sasha, where like, you can deal with people being sort of prickly and jerks, but the moment that somebody is incredibly kind to you, you completely lose your shit, like
meltdown. Oh yeah.
Right. And so like in the presence of somebody else's pain, sometimes that's all it takes for a person to just completely dissolve, because it's like, Okay, I don't know what room of hell you're in, but I can see that you're in hell. Thank God. Like, there's a prompt in the writing course about the Medusas taking off their hats and like where all the snakes get to be free, and what power it is to just like be in a room where everybody is prickly and covered in snakes. And like,
that's such a great metaphor. Yeah,
like your pain doesn't have to be covered up, and people don't need to be protected from it, you know, which is sometimes how we feel in the outside world.
And I know, like, the energy, oh my God, the energy hiding it.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Was so hard.
Yeah.
The energy of just trying to be something different than what I really was just exhausting on a level that I couldn't keep up. I do think what you said, though, I think one thing you said it earlier on, and I think it relates really well to this, is you can go back. Yeah. Like, so like, if you, if you don't do it right, I think years later, I think it's actually really an incredible thing to do, is go back years later and say to someone, I fucked that up.
Yep.
Like, I fed the wrong things, and I wasn't there, and I want to see if we can try again. And I think people are really, my experience, some of the time, not all the time, people can be really open to that when the dust has settled a little bit. They're like, oh, wow. And they can appreciate the apology and the recognition of the fact that it wasn't dealt with 100%. It's not just because you didn't deal with it right once doesn't make it the forever decision.
Yeah, that's not for keepsies, right? Like, you do get to have yours. And like, that's that process of making amends, right? We can borrow that from the recovery community, where I recognize that these were the things that I did, and that wasn't my intention, but they landed that way. And here's how I take responsibility, and here's what I'd like to do moving forward, right? Like, these are truth and reconciliation conversations, which I always go back and like look at as this incredible example of how we acknowledge damage, right? You can't go back and undo damage, but you can acknowledge it, and that makes it different, right? Like, I think that can really heal some relationships if you can come back and say, wow, I have learned a lot
since then.
And looking back, I'm sort of horrified at the ways that I showed up for you, and they weren't right, and I'm sorry, and here's what I know, and here's what I'm going to do differently moving forward. Do you have any questions of me?
Exactly. And I think it takes bravery, and that bravery makes, like, the bravery to like face yourself.
Yes.
Like, that's what this pandemic, I know we said we were going to talk about this pandemic the whole time. We haven't talked about it that much at all, but this, the thing I'm finding in this is I feel like it's like kind of challenging me to be a bit braver with my self. So I'm kind of like, it's like asking you to step up a little bit, in the sense that there's a lot of distraction that's been taken out of the equation.
Can you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Yes, I can. well, but
you just said you're being braver. I want you to tell me how.
I'm going to give you an example. It's very, and I'm putting myself out there. But I'm going to do it. So I was in bed watching American Beauty. It's on Netflix now. my husband was downstairs. I was upstairs. He'd gone for a run. And then I was getting towards the end of the movie. I won't give away the end of the movie, although I'm sure most people have seen it. But the main character is talking about his daughter as she is almost an adult, and then he remembers her as she is a little girl, and it's just this like very moving piece of the movie, and I just immediately press pause and like bawled crying, because I had felt like I was on my phone too much around my daughter. And for some reason, it made me think, these moments are precious, and someday she's going to be a teenager and she's going to be an adult. And am I scrolling while these moments are happening, or am I really as present as I should be? Sorry, it's actually very hard to talk about. Yeah, it's gross. Yeah. And I was like, I have to deal with this. I got to cut down on this. I got to face it that, you know, I know it's not just me. I know it is a global phenomenon that we're all doing this, but I was kind of like, if I can cut back a little bit more and be more present and really, really feel these moments more. And I don't think I would have recognized that a couple of weeks ago. I think I was living in a little bit of a fog where that was concerned.
Yeah.
And it was tough and yucky. And I still feel yucky talking about it now because it's kind of like, you know, you have to hold yourself up to the light and say, I've got to be better than I'm being. So yeah, that in that way, I feel like it's kind of like there's no place to hide with some stuff. Like I don't know. There's just so much distraction in day-to-day life. And now there's a little bit of this like quiet, which is also really hard for everybody.
Yes. Yeah.
But for me, that's the example that came to mind where I was like, I felt like it was a good thing, a really scary, horrible thing that made me cry a lot, but a good thing to recognize.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with, not only with me, but with everybody. Yeah. Right? Because that is bravery to hold your gaze on yourself. Mm. Right. And to be able to look at that and be like, oof, future me is going to regret something that present me is doing. And there's something in there about, oh gosh, I just had it in my head and it was so beautiful. Come on back into my brain. But something about like there, like we kind of get squicked out by those intense self realizations. And I also like underneath that is a real desire to show up for your life and to honor the relationship and the transient nature of life and the fleeting nature of life. And that's a love impulse, right? Like as painful and messy and uncomfortable as that is to see it, it's like, what is the impulse underneath that? The impulse underneath that is I want to be here in this love I have for my daughter. So what are some ways that I can be present in that? Because what I just saw was uncomfortable and not in line with what I want. And like, it also reminded me of one of the translations of the Aramaic word that we get as sin, that was really badly described. A different translation of the word sin is to miss the mark, right? Which I really, really love, instead of it being like this weird cosmic pass-fail, you fuck up, you're doomed. But instead it reframes it as what we were talking about earlier, like we're aiming towards this one thing. And sometimes we miss the mark. And if we miss the mark on something important, then maybe we want to recalibrate.
Yeah.
Maybe we want to look at, how can I set things up a little bit better? How can I structure things for myself that I am more likely to meet my aim, like to hit the mark that I want so that I don't fall away from it? And that shit's uncomfortable.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Like it's, and I feel like a lot of the stuff that you talk about has helped me come to that. And a lot of the kind of like reading I've done ever since my mom died is about the yucky stuff, the denial, and trying to like it's very easy to tell yourself things that make you make peace with things, right? Like, so I'm going to make peace with how I'm acting, or I'm going to make peace with my decisions because it's just too yucky and it just hurts too much to go any other direction with this. But now, and especially with what's going on right now, I feel like I was going to say opportunity. I don't know what I mean. We have no choice. We're in this.
Right.
Like it's not about an opportunity. It's just about the reality that there's this time and lots of time.
Lots of time.
And I would rather use some of it to invest in some of the real stuff in my brain and my heart if I can. Mm-hmm. Where I can without overwhelming myself, but also just finding a way to go, there's some shit you got to deal with. And you know, it's
well,
here.
I like that the shit you're dealing with is in the service of more love and connection, right? You know, I gotta stop online shopping or something. Like I gotta stop doing these things that are not building a relationship in the way that I want to. Like, I guess I'm just like, I'm such a big advocate for like, let's reframe that as love, even though it feels yucky. Right. And I think this is one of the things that is happening during this pandemic is that people are connecting more or wanting to connect more because suddenly our distractions, and distractions are not bad. Distractions are also routine. Like we're busy. Yeah. So it's not a bad thing, but without those distractions, without those daily routines, we're suddenly like, oh, wow, connections are really important. Yeah. Connections are the only thing we have, right? Like all of this other external stuff can go away, but connection is our survival. So where do my relationships need tending? Where do my relationships need work? And, you know, grief throws a monkey wrench into all of that stuff anyway.
Mm.
So, and then we've got you also in that sort of liminal time of being pregnant. Yes. During all
you
of this.
You can't see that right now, but
can't
I'm
see
very
that, but
pregnant.
We know it's there.
She's very
and
pregnant.
You also had that, you had that article come out in the Statesman in the UK today. So I linked in that, and we'll link it again when we put this up in stories, but this all stitches in together, like this really intense time where sort of the outer trappings of daily life are not available at this time. Mm. There are a lot of new stressors, and connection is really important. And it's sort of like, this is what we've been talking about in the grief community for such a long time, is like the importance to connect, the importance to tell the truth about your own experience and how that builds relationships. And now it's like, well, the rest of the world is starting to come into the party a little bit. And, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, relationships are important, and empathy and connection. And we're like, yeah, we got you. We're on this.
I know. Yeah. And I have really been like, I won't say laughing, but like laughing a little bit, watching some of the stuff you're talking about, because I'm like, oh my God, it's crazy how, you know, I'm going to say it. Suddenly, collectively, people are like, I don't want my parents to die. And I'm like, no shit, you don't want your parents to die. Like, that would really suck, huh? Like, it's
awful.
Yeah.
And you'd be sad, right? So like when I was sad, it was actually okay. Right? You get that now?
Exactly. And people are like, I'm afraid my loved ones are going to die. I'm afraid my partner is going to die. I'm afraid that my child might get this. I'm afraid. And you're sitting there thinking, well, yeah. It's nice to see the world open up to empathy and open up to these ideas and think I think the word is definitely vulnerability. There's this like collective vulnerability that just wasn't there. I feel like, to me, well, this is just my feeling of how I would interpret it. The world felt like a lot of bravado, you know, and now it's like, it's not, no one's getting away with that. There's no bravado here.
Yeah. And I think that bravado is like, that's a protective mechanism, right? Yeah. It's also one of the reasons that we avoid talking about grief and try to cheer other people up, is because we don't want to understand how soft and vulnerable this body is and the bodies of the people we love. Yeah.
I mean, that's like, I only, vulnerability, my friend Courtney, who I don't know if she's watching this, but
hi, Courtney.
I'll give her a shout out. She like really opened my eyes about vulnerability. It was something I had never really, I always like saw it as like something to like hide, or, you know, like don't open it up. Don't show it to people. Yeah. Now I'm like really into learning about it. And one of the big things is at work. I've been reading about like the power. I manage a team, a digital creative team, and like just being vulnerable with them, just telling them how I feel. And being okay to say, hey, this is really scary. Are you scared? I'm scared.
Mm.
You know, or saying things like, oh, you know, my husband and I had a fight last night and it sucked. And having people go, oh, that gives them the kind of, that they can be vulnerable too.
Yes.
My husband and I didn't have a fight last night. I know he's probably downstairs watching this going like, what fight are you talking about?
I thought that you were talking about a coworker who was sharing that story. So
that's okay. Maybe they had a fight last night. I don't know. But
we were talking about a hypothetical person. Is what we were
but the vulnerability, the collective vulnerability, feeling everyone being vulnerable. It's overwhelming.
Yes.
Actually.
Well, there's a reason we avoid that, right? Because it can be overwhelming, and trying to avoid that vulnerability and the feelings that come up when you start tapping that, like that's why we try to talk other people out of their grief or bypass it. And I think you're right. Like we don't have that luxury right now. The general population, there's too much mortality right in your face.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's also doing this thing where like people are having this reaction where they don't want to know anything about it as well, because it's so scary.
Sure. And that's like, that's human nature too, right? Like going back to like scrolling on your phone or like checking out with all of the different iterations of Star Trek, because that's the only thing you can handle. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Right? I think we also have this idea that distractions are a bad thing, and like, you have to be able to check out sometimes. Like, I have a really big capacity to listen to pain from other people, but it is not limitless. And if I don't go check out and watch Star Trek, which has a lot of grief themes, by the way, friend. Spoilers, geez. But you have to be able to step back and to avert your eyes sometimes. Otherwise, you can't stay here. Right?
You can't stay here, and you also lose your you're depleted, and you're not as good as you could be. And I think that's like, to be your best self, there has to be something that, like last night, my friends and I, we did a Zoom party for a birthday. Yeah. And we just laughed, honestly, like, I'm so pregnant. They all had drinks. I didn't, obviously. And like, they were drunk. And
I'm so pregnant.
I'm just so pregnant. Like, I was just like, I was actually taking, they were drinking beer and I was drinking indigestion medication. Like, I was like, I was like downing it out of the bottle. And we laughed, man. We laughed so much about the stupidest stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was the release and the catharsis that just needed to happen. Like, I just needed to get on with these exact people and have a laugh and talk about really dumb stuff. And it, you know, without those things and without those, you know, without, I mean, that's where technology is becoming a really, like, I'm so fascinated as to what our relationship is going to be like with it at the end of this.
Yeah.
Like, will it be our savior, or will it be our, you know?
The connections that we're finding through the safety of the screen, and how do they translate back out into the physical world of touch? I don't know. It's going to be, we get to lead with curiosity on that one.
Totally.
That's awesome. So we've got about 6 minutes before we're going to wrap up. So I just want to give us that marker. And friends, the reason we do that is because when I did an Instagram live on Monday, I didn't realize that Instagram shuts it down at an hour.
Yes, it does.
And they shut it down automatically and you don't get a chance to save it. So I'm trying to be really mindful of time this time. So knowing that we have about 6 minutes, and we, you know, we sort of touched on all of the things that we wanted to touch on, and we sort of naturally came back to community and community of grieving people, and why having spaces to be able to tell the truth about your own experience is important, and even being able to be in a place where you can laugh with fellow grieving people, it's like you can giggle from your, you know, down the hallway in the rooms of hell. And what do you want to wrap us up with, thinking about grief and community and making spaces for each other?
I just think I think we, right now, like we were just talking there a little bit, we have, like, this just feels like a time where we have a little bit of space to talk to each other some more, and not to kind of, to, I think it would be a good time for, like, to talk a bit. I personally feel like talking about my own grief feels a little bit scary right now, like, with everything that's going on. But it's still so important, and I hope it doesn't get sidetracked and people don't feel like they can't talk about their stories.
Yeah.
I hope people still know that there's places where these stories are being told and we're listening, and that it's just because there's a global pandemic doesn't mean that the person that you lost 3 months ago suddenly gets overshadowed by that. That's so far from the truth.
Yeah.
And that people, I mean, grief is a very lonely experience. Anyway,
in the best of times.
In the best of times, reaching out can feel like an abyss. So when you can't actually see your friends and you can't go to a movie or you can't do these things that help, it can be even harder. So I just hope that these pockets of community, these places that we have tried to make, are places that people feel they can be open and talk and feel supported. Even if it's just with a couple of love hearts and a I'm with you and I hear you message, because there are other people out there who are in the same boat, who are listening.
Yeah, there are more of us out here than you would think.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, even the best of supporters in your personal circles right now, sometimes because of this pandemic, their bandwidth has evaporated. Yeah. They've got their own emotional and family triage going on. And even if they wanted to be there for you, they just don't have the capacity. And that doesn't mean your need goes away. Right. And finding these spaces, leaning into these spaces, you know, stuff like Sasha's podcast and our online communities, even the comments section here. I've been watching people connect in the comments on live here and linking up and buddying up everybody. Right.
I think look at you and me, like, you know, right? we connected through it. And like now I feel like we have like a genuine, we're pals and it feels great.
We are. And hopefully. So I know, right? Like, you know where I'm going?
I know where you're going.
I have a giant family trip planned to Ireland for October of this year. It was a surprise for my parents for Christmas. It is fucking happening.
It's happening this October,
but it is happening.
It's happening. We're making this happen.
That's right. We need my parents to get to Ireland before they die, friends. So wash your hands, shelter at home. Yeah. We have plans.
We need to get Megan to Ireland ASAP.
We need to get my parents to Ireland so that I can fulfill their lifelong dreams before somebody gets sick and dies. So
yes,
it is all about me right
Play
now.
By the rules.
All right, I'm going to wrap this up so that Instagram doesn't
cut
us off. Anyway, thank you, darling Sasha.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Your people from me. I'll talk to you soon. Okay. Bye, friends.
Bye, bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.